welcome to the Messiantics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
We were actually just having a random conversation as we were getting ready to start recording and decided to hit record. So you're jumping into our kind of brainchild of where we are at the second as we dive into this conversation. We were really talking about like large congregations, small congregations, and there's this really weird phenomena that we see where smaller congregations, whether it's small churches or small Messianic synagogues or what have you, are always trying to keep up with the Joneses, sort of, right? What are the mega churches doing? What are the bigger congregations? What are the what brought this conversation up was that at the UMJC, the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, at their winter leadership conference a few years back, it was pre-COVID, so it was like 2019, which was perfect timing for it,
right?
Because we were all starting to reevaluate in a year what we were doing, right? So, but at the winter leadership conference, they brought in a pastor. His name's Carl Vader. Who wrote a whole series of books on small churches and how a small church can be and is successful at what it is. And basically, he wasn't saying like the big churches or big synagogues is a problem, but rather that you should be what you are until you're something different, right? And so we were talking about that very idea and how so often smaller congregations think that what mega congregations, what mega churches, what large synagogues do is what they need to do to become successful like that, right? So, yeah, you got to put the giant 40-foot LED wall behind your stage, and you got to have all the lights and smoke and whatever and the big band that's all, perfectly timed out and everything. I think about it, I was at a buddy's church once. Big church, and their worship team was doing this one particular song. I forget what it was, and they had it choreographed out that at a specific moment in the song, everybody on stage was going to start jumping with the song up and down. And it was clear that it was like choreographed; it was an intentional thing, and it was weird the way it played out. But they did this whole thing. But like we as smaller congregations, that it's like if you. The mindset is if you don't have the 100, 200, 300 people, and I'm talking Messianic side, and the church side, you're talking thousands, but a mega congregation in Messianic Judaism is probably 300 to 600 people.
Right.
But like, do we have to try to keep up with the Joneses? Like, are there ways that we can be successful as small congregations, Messianic synagogues, small churches, whatever it may be? Can you be successful if you're not large?
Right.
And so we were just kind of playing around with this conversation, hit record, and so now you're kind of up to speed with where we are as we play around with this.
I think you can, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of successful congregations that are successful in discipleship and training and teaching and being a consistent place of meeting and worship. I think it's important that small congregations, one, they have to learn, kind of like what we're getting at, is you have to learn how to be healthy as what you are. But you also have to be, it can't be rooted in opposition either. So this is kind of like the opposite. Like, you cannot try to be a successful small congregation out of spite for being a small congregation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, mega churches, like they have smoke machines and stages and large spaces.
And we're not going to do that.
We're going to be like real believers in a real place.
So I think you hit the nail on the head without actually saying it. And that is, how do we define success?
Right.
Like you brought up, well, there are some small congregations that are really good at discipleship, that are really good at generosity, really good at this and that. Like, yeah, but how are we? Are we defining success by number of seats and or number of butts and seats? Mm-hmm. Are we defining success by what the offering is each week? Are we defining success by what the outreach budget is, what the production budget is, what the staff size is? Or are we defining success by what we are doing as individual congregations to meet the call and direction God has given us for our communities?
Yeah, I think it's human nature to measure success like that.
Yeah.
I mean, David kind of asked a question like, so how do we define success? And then he says, is it how many people, how much, the budget and this, that, and the other. And I think it's human nature not to go like preachy or anything, but I think it's why God says in like Psalm 33, I think it's why God makes a point to say through the psalmist, I mean, God didn't say this, but the psalmist, I believe under the direction of the Holy Spirit in Psalm 33 said, a horse is a false hope for victory. A king can't be saved by his army. I think God is saying you can't measure success by the way that humans normally measure success, which is through physical prowess and numbers and all that stuff. And I think that that is a problem. I think one of the biggest warnings Scripture gives us about the you know, that's another, that might be another discussion. I think that for me, okay, so this is probably a whole other discussion, but I think also the problem is that we talk about the problems, you know, how we should respond to failure and this, that, and the other, but we also don't talk enough about warning people about success, because just because you're successful doesn't mean you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Or that you're doing well just because you're successful.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I read a blog post about King Saul, and King Saul was, you know, he won every single military engagement until his last one where he fell on his own sword.
Right.
And all through that time, he had men following him.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I think the problem is how we measure success. And I think also the problem is that I think there is an assumption, whether no matter the size of the church, that the challenges are the same, and they're not. Because small churches and small congregations, synagogues, have challenges, and right. So do large ones. Like, for instance, not to rag on the mega church, and because I think that there is, you know, benefits and advantages, but I think one of your biggest issues in mega churches is discipleship, because a lot of people like to go to those things so they can just get lost in it, you know,
sure.
and avoid accountability, and I think, you know, that's a big issue.
Yeah, here in Pensacola, we had the Brownsville Revival, which a lot of people are very familiar with. Brownsville Church is just a short distance away from where our synagogue is. And one of the things that happened at Brownsville was that they had this big move where they were having thousands and thousands of people come. And there were a bunch of people that entered into a relationship with the Messiah that got redeemed, and there was a true move of God that happened in the hearts of many, many people. But they didn't have a mechanism to disciple those people when they came. And there, in that particular case, the Assembly of God churches, there's plenty of them around here, that Brownsville could have said, okay, now that you met Messiah here,
right.
You live over in that part of town, why don't you join and attach yourself to that congregation so that you can be discipled, so that we can continue to bring more people into the kingdom and grow at this in an organic way as the Assembly of God and not just as Brownsville. And because they didn't have a mechanism to disciple people, now they had Sunday school and they had different things, but not that could handle the crowds that they had. Ultimately, they opened a college, so they had a mechanism for getting people to a Bible school that wanted to go into ministry, but they really didn't have a mechanism
right.
for the average person who was coming to faith at that church, so they didn't have a discipleship program. And then when the move ended, this isn't an episode to talk about the rise and fall of Brownsville. But they ended up to where the church is now just a shadow of its former
right.
self, and they had to sell off their school, they had to sell off a lot of their property, they had to do a lot of things, but because they never had a mechanism to actually grow as a congregation, they just had this mechanism to get people to come to faith, and they had great services. If you were unsaved, if you didn't know Messiah, you would hear about Messiah. You would hear about redemption. You would hear about forgiveness. You would hear about repentance. You would hear all of those things there. But once you heard that and accepted that, they did not have a mechanism, as Toby was talking about what do you do next? How do I go
right.
from here to there? Where I need someone to parent me to,
right.
And there really wasn't that kind of a setup
yeah,
there.
Like I've heard I've heard a congregational leader say to their people, I've heard them say, hey, I'm happy that you're here, but if you want to leave, go ahead. I mean, some of you, you know, want to stay for a little bit. That's fine. Some of you might have a church you go to. That's fine. Go ahead and go to the church. And I'm, you know, you can just come and go. That's fine. And I'm like, I don't know how healthy that is, because the problem is you're saying that it's okay for your place to have a revolving door. And if you want that, don't call yourself a community. It's at best you're a speaking or a teaching ministry. And that's and I also do think that I think it's important. I mean, I'm not saying that I have the solution, but I think if you're a congregation with, you know, 8,000 people, I understand it's a challenge, but I do think it's weird if you go to a congregation, like for instance, and I have to take this from the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast, where someone was talking, you know, which is about the rise and fall of the megachurch in Seattle, Mars Hill, which I think every believer should listen to, not just because it's a critique of the megachurch, but because I think it's what can happen when absolute authority can corrupt a person. But I think that one of the things they said, though, was like, they talk about how in these big churches, people say, oh, that's my pastor, but they've never met the dude.
Right.
And I'm not saying I know how to fix that situation, but I think for people to not be able for there to be a chasm between the sheep and their shepherd at a congregation, I think is problematic.
Right. Yeah. I think metrics are good. They're not necessarily a determining factor for success, but they're a determining factor for where you are. It's like if you're an athlete and you get a physical, you are going to go in usually to, well, let's say you were an athlete, you got injured, you had to get healed up, whatever, physical therapy, but you're no longer running the 800 meter sprint in, you know, 30 seconds. You know, you're kind of out of shape, you know. Yeah, but you're healthy, you know. Mm-hmm. So you could go in and your heart rate could be good, blood pressure is good, mm-hmm. Cholesterol levels are good. And those are all metrics that a doctor is going to use to look at and go, oh, yeah, you're good to get back on the track. And those all may be good, but you may not be successful in what you're – and if you're a track runner, you know, you may not be – if you're out of shape, you – and it's not like you're like – you know, fat and unhealthy, obese, right. Kind of out of shape, but just like you haven't been running those sprints, you haven't been running 6 miles, you know, 3 times a week. You may not be successful, even though you have all of the conditions to be successful.
Right.
You have all the metrics in place for there to be success. It's just you actually have to get out and train the right way.
Right.
Yeah. And I think there's a difference between success and affluence. You know, affluence as the accumulation of, you know, either wealth or things, property, space, people, time. And, you know, if we can have all those things, but then if we don't, for example, discipleship, well, how do you disciple a congregation of 8,000 people? Well, it's not going to be
have groups.
It's not going to be one pastor.
No,
so, yeah, a lot of churches do break down into small groups. Now, what I will say is I think if you're going to do that, and I don't really know of any Messianic congregations that have had to embrace that concept of having like small groups, like they're big enough to need small groups.
I don't know if there's anybody that's had to, but there are a number of congregations that implement them.
Okay, yeah, and I like the idea.
Yeah, I'm not against that. Right.
Yeah, but I also think that if you're going to lead a small group, it shouldn't just be, oh, Joe's been here like 4 years, let's like throw him in the ring. It's like to lead that. It's like, no, I think they should actually receive at least some of the same training and education and experience that, you know, within the Messianic sphere that Messianic rabbi does. For example, MCS ordains Messianic teachers. I think you should at least have to go through that process and be that. That way, again, you're actually, you know, looking at those metrics. Okay, we've got a teacher who's healthy. He's got sound doctrine. He's taught, he's had years within the IMCS and the movement, he's proved he's been here, we've seen him, we know him, put him in charge of that small group there. And
I think that the issue is that, you know, the best biblical picture we have of what the Messianic community should look like is when we look in the in Paul's letters. And the interesting thing about Paul's letters is that Paul was building congregations and addressing congregational life, I would say, under the umbrella of persecution. I mean, it was not like it is today, where I can go out and start a church if I want right now, or start a, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people do that. I mean, you'll see in some cases four churches on the same street. I'm not knocking that. Right. I mean, I'm all about spreading the gospel. What I'm saying, though, is that there's no real map. The context, the cultural context that we're in today, is way different from when they were building congregations in the first century.
Right.
You know?
Well, we just have very different, you know, mega churches wouldn't really, there was no need for something like that. I mean, you had the temple, which, I mean, for all, you know, intents and purposes, was a mega church.
Mm-hmm. And all for like media outreach.
Right.
You know, and like.
Yeah. We can't say that mega churches are not good, because.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, no, I know.
I know we were talking about their unique challenges that small churches,
right.
Small
because, you know, they're. Mega churches, like, if you want to have a conference, like, dude, that's a good place to host one, you know, especially some of these bigger campus places. Like, you know, and I'm sure, you know, there are some Messianic synagogues that are big enough to be good size for, you know, conferences and big, you know, big events, big things that we can gather for. Because, you know, most of the time we use hotel conference spaces and, you know, Messiah College for Messiah University.
But I think that for a small church, you know, or a small Messianic congregation, I know that one of the topics they probably talk about, you know, I'm not a fly in the room, but I'm sure that growth is something they talk about.
Right. And
so my thing is, and we can talk about it, is I think I guess my question is, okay, but why do you want the growth?
Well, then I would pose a question to your question. what kind of growth? Because
usually it's more people.
Usually that's what we usually hear is the example given of what it means to grow is, we had 20 more people come this week. It's like, okay, great, but like that just means 20 more people walked through the door. That doesn't mean you as a community actually grew
right
in some in a meaningful way. It just means,
or more important, and this is actually something Carl Vaders mentions, more important than that is, if we're talking about how do we define success, well, how do we define growth? Right.
Right.
Growth in a congregational atmosphere shouldn't just be considering new people coming in
right.
and plugging into the congregation, because odds are, and especially for Messianic Jewish synagogues, a significant portion of that group of people are transference growth. So it's not kingdom growth. It's not body of Messiah growth.
Right.
It's people leaving
right.
one community and coming to another.
Right.
I think a better, more healthy approach to factoring what a growth of a congregation actually is. Well, how many people have you led to Messiah this year? How many people have you walked through discipleship this year? How many people have you walked through healing and restoration? How many marriages have experienced healing and restoration? How many
right.
children have been restored to
right.
their parents? How many?
Yeah. When we talk about growth, it's there's actually two different things. One is numbers. And we increase in numbers by basically three ways. One is we have children, you know. So you have Rabbi Jonathan just had a baby last year.
A year ago.
And so we have group. We have one more human being that attends our congregation. Now,
you got to remember, at his age, a year ago still feels like it was a recent memory. So
yeah, I'm just glad I remember it. That's all. You know, so but a brand new baby, that's... You know, it is a human. It is another body. It is
right.
somebody there. They count. They have value. But that's not the same as somebody who's, like, actively a part of the congregation.
Right.
The second way is by people coming in from other congregations, which, as Rabbi David just said, you know, a lot of – we have transference. We have people that either from another synagogue or another church – Messianic synagogue or another church that would come to our congregation and become part of our community. But that's not kingdom growth. That's transference from another community. And then the third one is people that come that aren't believers that get born again and become part of our congregation.
Yeah, right.
Now, that's numbers. That's different from growth, which is how do we take those people that whether they're newborns that just came into the congregation, they're transfers that came into the congregation, or they're new births into the kingdom,
right,
and actually grow them? How do we establish them as active participants in kingdom life and not just attendance? Because we have a lot of people that come to our communities that are attendants.
Right.
Right.
They're you know, in any congregation, doesn't matter what size, where, you have generally 10 to 15% and sometimes 20% of the people do all the stuff. They're the ones that are at the Bible studies, they're at the prayer meetings, they're at the events when you go out to do outreach. They're the ones helping in the nursery, they're the ones teaching in the Shabbat schools, they're the one doing the things, while 80% or more show up for service, hang out for fellowship, and so on, but they're not actively kingdom workers.
Right.
So there's attendance, but not growth,
mm-hmm.
at least not in the same way. And hopefully some of those people will hear something, do something, connect with the Spirit, listen to God, and start to grow. But growth, in my opinion, and is people actually growing in their faith, actively working in the kingdom, rather than just growth in numbers. There's lots of congregations that have thousands of people,
right,
that show up and are participants as if it was a ball game or a concert.
Mm-hmm.
They come, they get entertained, they get their ears tickled, they hear something that may be meaningful to them, and then they're out the door, and that's it. So success, you can have a congregation of 50 that is more successful than a congregation of 1,000 if those 50 people are actually being mentored, being discipled, and are actively working in the kingdom.
Right.
Where we would look on the outside and say, this one with 1,000 is a successful congregation, this one with 50 is an unsuccessful congregation. When kingdom-wise, the one with 50 is more successful than the one with 1,000.
Yeah, and it possibly. It doesn't always mean that big congregations aren't, you know, healthy.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying that.
And I've been to meetings and places and Bible studies of, you know, much smaller gatherings of people that were definitely way more unhealthy and way off skew. So it's not like 100% either way. But you do stand a chance normally, mm-hmm. of having a healthier, smaller congregation only because the leaders can pour into more people individually.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but that also depends on the leader.
Yes,
because I have seen smaller leaders of smaller congregations that here's the reality is we. Because we're human, we have the tendency of comparing ourselves to others, right? So, as you know, our congregation, congregation Maim Chaim and Daphne is 12 years old, actually in two Shabbats from now. So, not this coming Shabbat, the Shabbat following is our 12th anniversary.
Mazel tov.
And in 12 years, we've seen a lot of growth and a lot of what I would call success and so on. But we're not at the same place that Bredom in Pensacola is at, what, almost 30 years? How old is Bredom now?
It'd be 30 years in a year and a half.
Okay.
And yeah,
so
26.
At just short of 30 years that Bredom has been in Pensacola, you guys are at an entirely different era in your ministry than we are at CMC. And Bredom has a much larger community with a lot more impact in the greater community around, solely because you've been here longer, you have deeper relationships and deeper ties than we do. And it would be really easy for me to go, well, you know, we've been at this for a long time, but we're not at the same size you are. We haven't seen the same number of new salvations as you have each year, and we have. But if you look at the size of the differentiation in the congregations, if you were just to compare on an even scale, I would say we're probably relatively close to each other in terms of productivity as a successful congregation.
Right.
But because the perspective is looking at, well, this one's bigger than that one,
right?
So we have this habit of comparing, but we're not actually comparing the right factors.
Yeah.
We're comparing, and because we're constantly on the comparing, a lot of smaller congregations, the leaders of those congregations are actually doing more harm to those congregations than good, because they're constantly in this begrudging mentality. Well, yeah, we've been doing this for 15, 20 years, and we haven't grown, and we're not bigger, and we're not this, and we're not that. And well, we don't have the money that they have, and we don't have the staff that they have, and we don't have this that they have, and we don't have the programs and productions that they have. Well, that's true. Maybe you don't. But maybe you're exactly what God wants you to be, at least at this moment. And maybe you should just focus on who you are and work in that sphere.
Yeah, we have to remember things. For instance, the prophet Jeremiah was one of the most successful prophets in the Bible, from what you read and he's still reaping benefits. I mean, the New Covenant prophecy was in Jeremiah that we read about the New Covenant and what's happening. Yet in his entire ministry, he never saw one person come to repentance. And so we would look at him under our metrics today and say Jeremiah was a failure as a leader and as a prophet when he was very successful. Another thing, and Rabbi David kind of alluded to this earlier, is that we look at, like, when Brownsville was going on, and I'm sorry I'm bringing Brownsville up again, but when Brownsville was going on, Brownsville had certain things they did. They had certain choruses that they sang in their thing, and they had certain, and they had flags that they had hung up around their building, and then they had flags that they waved during their worship, and they had different things. So pastors would go to Brownsville, and they'd say, how did this revival start? Well, let me make notes. Okay, they have worship choruses, and they have flags, and they have dancers, and they have this, and they have that. So they would go back to their congregation and say, I have the keys to revival. We need to have flags and choruses and dancers and this and that.
Right.
When that's not the key to revival. I have a friend who has a congregation of about 350 people, which is a good-sized Messianic congregation.
A real good-sized.
Who for years used canned music. They didn't have a live worship team, so they used canned music. But there are people that would say, you can't grow a congregation with canned music. You have to have a live worship team. Uh-huh. Or you can't grow a congregation without your own building to any sizable length. But I know several congregations that have large communities that have rented a building and have no intention of ever buying their own building. They'd rather, then their vision is to invest that money in a different way rather than into buying a building.
Right.
So we look at things like a successful congregation owns their own building. Well, why is that a metric of success if there's congregations that are equally as large, equally as effective, equally that rent a building? Or those things. A successful congregation has its own worship team, or has multiple rabbis, or has this, or has that. I'm not against any of those things.
Right.
We have a live worship team. We have multiple rabbis. We have the things. But that's not a metric of success, nor should that be our goal. Rabbi David said, his congregation is 11 or 12 years old now. Ours is a little older. He should not look at our congregation and say, if we're going to be at that level, we have to have those things.
Right. Sure.
Each congregation should have what it has led by God so that they can be successful in what they're doing. And one of the things that David has mentioned Carl Vatter a couple of times, but in his talk he was shared, and I love this example, and I just mentioned it a few minutes ago before we came on, that he said if you compared an IKEA with a Starbucks, IKEA's has a huge building and they're a very successful business, but if Starbucks was to build a coffee shop as big as IKEA, they would fail. And if IKEA tried to build their store in a Starbucks, they would fail. But they're both successful businesses. But the goal of IKEA is to keep you in the store as long as possible. They maze it out so you can't find your way out.
Right.
And in the middle of the store, they have a little place you can get food because you've been there so long, you have to eat so you can find your way out. Where Starbucks' purpose is to get you in and out as soon as possible. So depending on what your vision for your congregation is, a congregation may be all about home groups.
Right.
So they have meetings, but their large meetings are to get people connected to a home group,
right,
where they're going to be discipled and trained in that way. There's other congregations that don't use home groups at all,
right,
that their vision for their congregation is to have the large group fellowship together in some way. Both are successful models.
Right.
And one is not more successful than the other or more whatever. It's what God leads that congregation to do as long as the teaching is healthy.
Right.
And I think that's another important thing to hit on is often when we're teaching or hearing teaching and leadership meetings, seminars, conferences, classes, whatever, things are laid out as if you want to be successful, these are the checklists you have to fill out. These are the metrics you have to hit, right? So, for instance, small groups, those that are very fond of small groups and teach the value of small groups will teach it. They won't flat out say it, but they'll teach it in a way that they'll say, okay, if you want to be successful as a congregation, you have to implement small groups. And small groups have to have and they've got their role in. And if you aren't doing this, you're not going to be as successful as these people. Or preaching. Like, I remember when I was in my undergrad and they were doing homiletics classes, right? They teach in, at least at the school I went to, they teach an expository message. And the way they teach it isn't, this is the method that I have found works best for me and maybe will work well for you. The way they teach it is, this is the only method that works,
right?
Topical sermon doesn't work. This type doesn't work. This is the only way. And it always made me mad because they would say, this is the only way that you can accurately relay the word of God to people is through an expository message. And I'm like, well, for a lot of people, an expository message will work really well, absolutely.
Right.
But to say it's the only way is a stretch. To say that this is the only way you can be good at this. And so whether it's a congregation that runs small groups or it's a congregation that has live worship, like my thing at CMC, and Rabbi Toby and I have talked about this a lot since he's been there and we both agree on it, but my thing at CMC since we started is, look, we don't have everything, but what we can do, we're going to do with the most excellence that's available to us because God is worth our best of what we have, right?
Right.
He doesn't expect the best of what is available that we can't afford.
Right.
He expects us to give him the best that we have. And right. So when we, for years, we did canned music because that was all we had that we had access to, but we did it as excellent as we could.
Right.
And we removed as many distractions as we could so that you could focus on that. When we do liturgy, we try to put the most excellence forward we can. When we do our presentation software, like we pay a little bit to have a better presentation software for a better user experience and whatever, not because that's like the answer to everything, but because what we want to do is put the best excellence we can forward,
right,
so that everybody is able to feel like they're involved. Our teaching, activities, our events, whatever. We're not trying to break the bank. We're just trying to give God what God's right, due out right, of what right. we can do. And I think if we approach it that way, with that mentality of what each congregation can honestly do and what the Lord has placed on your heart as the leader or leadership of that congregation, you need to follow what the Lord is leading you in first and foremost. Number two, you don't need to try to keep up with the Joneses. And number three, you don't need to have a begrudging attitude because your congregation isn't where somebody else is
right.
in what you're determining success as.
Yeah.
Because what you are doing in that is you are undervaluing the people that you do have. You're undervaluing the work that you have been doing, and you're undervaluing what God has done in your midst. And Yeshua says, if you're not faithful with a little, why am I going to give you more?
Yeah, and you'll always be thinking yourself as a failure if you're comparing yourself to something you can't be. And
right.
and along with that is that you shouldn't try to be who you're not. In other words, my method and my way of speaking and doing in my messages is my way. If somebody come up to me and said, I want to be successful, I want to teach like you do, speak like you do, tell jokes the way you do, expound the way you do. I want to like mimic your way of doing that. They're never going to be successful at what they're doing because they're not me. And I actually enjoy listening to other people speak who don't do like I do. I want people to be who they were created to be in God.
Yeah.
I also want to say, and you know, just going back to, you can't. I think that I agree with Rabbi David. I think that everything we do should be excellent. I made a comment when I gave a message last week about. I said, you know, I talked about synagogues and churches that feel like they have to do certain things to make God more engaging or make Yeshua more engaging or make the gospel more engaging. And what I said was, God is already engaging. Yeshua is already engaging. The gospel is already engaging. We don't need to, add any more as far as to the beauty of what it is. That doesn't mean we just not present something excellent. But what I said was, what are we going to do? We're going to have good graphics. We're going to have this, that, and the other. And that doesn't mean I don't think we should have good graphics. What I was the message I was trying to get across is that you're always going to have those people in a congregation that are going to be fringe in this. And what I mean by that is they might just come because they're punching their time card so they can say that they go to a church or a synagogue. Or they might be going because they just like the speaker. Or they might be going because they think the graphics are cool and they like the music. And you're always going to have those people.
Right.
And if that's what they're getting out of it, they're going to get what they pay for and they're going to reap what they sow, you know. But I think that you'll always have that. But I agree. I think we should present excellence. I also want to say as far as growth goes, I think it's a farce to look at growth as just being more people because, and I think David kind of touched on it when he talked about people that are, I think it was David or maybe it was Eric that come in that are solely consumers in a congregation.
Right.
And you can have 1,000 people, but if 800 out of those 1,000 people are just taking and they're not giving, and I know that we mentioned this last either in a forthcoming episode that we've already recorded or not, but we talked about the issue of tithing, which is paltry. The numbers are so bad.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't consider it growth if I get 100 people, more people in my congregation, and 80 of them are not tithing. They're just coming and sitting and listening. And I'm not talking about people that don't have the means to tithe because I've been there. Man, I've been there. Me and my wife went through a whole year where we were living off a credit card. And God's not expecting me to give him money that I don't have.
Yeah.
But you have plenty of people that are more than capable of tithing. And they come in and they just don't give. They just think, oh, I don't know what they think. Honestly, I can't even make up a fake narrative of what somebody who doesn't give to the place that spiritually feeds them.
Right.
Their mindset is.
I think I was listening one time to someone talk about it. It was along the same lines of church growth and how much, or congregational growth and how much more congregations could do, not just for themselves but in our communities. And the lady that was talking was like, if only 4% of congregations would give consistently. And so that was a huge mind-opening moment that, like, oh my goodness, like,
if just 10%.
No, she was saying 4%.
Oh, 4.
Like, if only 4% of congregations gave consistently, I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me the statistic is that not even 4% of congregations give consistently?
Yeah. The percentages, I don't want to get the percentage of tithing was higher during the Great Depression than it is now.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm sorry.
So I think, I think having a healthy view of giving, what that means to, can help with success of a congregation. You know, you give more, you can fund more. You know, for example, if you can fund supplies to send in to prisons with, you know, your prison ministry, especially for Messianics, because, you know, we tend to not just bring Bibles into prisons and homeless camps. We also tend to bring things for, things like Passover and Hanukkah. So we're actually need to be able to purchase more things for those things. But another thing was, you know, a lot of these things we've mentioned are tools, small groups, live worship bands, you know, those are all tools. And not every congregation is going to need every tool.
It's not like, that the people are tools.
Right, right. You know what I'm saying. They are useful instruments. You know, it's like when I worked in cabinetry, I had a set amount of tools I needed. I needed my tape measure. I needed my hammer. I needed a pencil. I needed a screwdriver. Beyond that, I didn't need a whole lot else. Now, when I would go out to install, I needed to gather a few more tools, but that was a bigger job. It required more of me, and so that's the other thing too is. You need to understand what your responsibility is, where you are as a congregation, and what tools you need. And when God calls you into a different place, or you grow, let's say you grow in size, and again, not size being a metric for success, but a metric for just where you are, what you're capable of doing. You have more people, you might can step out and do a bigger community events. You might can have a bigger homeless ministry. You might can have a bigger prison ministry. You might can have a bigger presence and voice in the happenings of your town or your city when it comes to pursuing and asking for good and godly leadership within the city because you have more people who are voting and that sort of thing. Congregations also have to not be afraid to step up to be bigger. You know, so, you know, I couldn't, when I was working cabinetry, I could not be afraid of going and getting, you know, the power saws and things to take with me to install cabinets because I needed those tools to do the job. Otherwise, I could try and do it without those things, but it was going to be significantly more difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so smaller congregations can't, if you come to a place where you're about to cross that line of, I'm different than I was. Whether I'm a bigger congregation now, I own a building versus renting now, or stepping into a place where you need to do one of those things. There is no space in your town that can accommodate you by renting, and you have to step out and begin looking to build. And God's giving the opportunity to do that. Don't, out of fear and or pride, push that off and say, oh, we can't become bigger because we would be like somehow less holy if we become a quote-unquote bigger congregation. Because right. Small congregation is the only way to go. Home meetings is the only way to go. We can't grow bigger.
Right.
No, because then you end up, because God may want you to step up into actually pursue success as a larger congregation. And if you don't, you end up being disobedient.
Right. Well, I can give example of three different time as a congregation where we were successful but different. When we first started our congregation, we grew pretty significantly, fairly fast, but most of our people were young college, young marrieds, young, so we had a lot of energy,
right?
But we were broke because it was all families starting out. It was all kids in college. It was all, so we had a fairly large
right.
community for a Messianic congregation, but we were energetic, and we had people that were going out and sharing the good news and doing all the things that they could do, but we didn't have any funds. Then we went through a period of time where those young people got married, moved off, graduated, got jobs in different cities and so on. Then during that time, we got a much larger group of seniors. So we had people, most of our congregation then became people that were 50, 70, 80 years old. And we were successful in that. We had a good community. We had all going on. We had more finances because that group of people had more money to give. But we didn't have the energy that we had when we were filled with more young people. And so our missions, so to speak, our job, our outreach was different. It was more people going to people's houses and
right.
having dinners and doing things that age group did
right.
rather than the thing the younger age group did. And then we shifted again to where we started having a broad group of everything from infants to 100-year-olds. And we were successful there. Now, each of those models is significantly different,
right.
and the assets and the asset of energy versus the asset of finances were different, but all three were successful for what they were at that time.
Right. So I'm going to, since we're talking experiences for our congregation, I'll throw this out too. Our congregation, Congregation Maim Chaim, again, much like Brett Om, like what Rabbi Eric was saying, has had some unique experiences that are potentially vastly different than maybe what other congregations have experienced, that in our case have attributed to our success, but maybe aren't the story of success that other people would experience, and they're definitely not the only qualifier we use for whether or not we are being successful. But like I said earlier, our congregation is only 12 years old. On paper, we're super young. But in that time, since we were about a year and a half old as a congregation, we've had our own facilities. Now, for about a year and a half of that period, it was a like storefront warehouse kind of place that we retrofitted and we're using for our space. But we now are, you know, we have our own property, our own building. Not only do we have our own property and our own building, but we have a school that rents from us. We have another church that rents from us and have been with us. The school's been with us for, geez, like 7-8 years now. The church has been with us for 2 years now. Both have just signed new leases with us and phenomenal relationship with both of them. In that 12 years, we have a few things that have that God has done that I have no explanation for the how or why. Like, you know, the fact that we're 12 years old and we have our own building, and within the next 10 years it'll be paid off, hopefully even sooner than that, is mind-blowing, especially when you consider the rest of the Messianic movement and so few have their own space, much less have it anywhere close to paid off. Then on top of that, we're 12 years old. We have a live worship team and have for a number of years now. We have, at one point, we had multiple worship leaders and were able to rotate around so people weren't getting burned out. We have an assistant rabbi, which unfortunately so many Messianic congregations desperately need but don't have. We have a phenomenal community as a whole. And you know, numbers wise, sure, we're a decent sized congregation. Most Messianic congregations are 40 people or less, and we are about double that, give or take, on average. And what have you. But we've also been successful in watching people come to faith, coming back to faith, finding a deeper walk with the Lord. We've seen tremendous healings, miraculous things occur. We've had some really phenomenal and we look at that as a total picture and go, okay, for right. our congregation, this may look different than most Messianics and AIs have experienced, but for us, this is part of where we see us being successful. We see, not because these independently are factors of success, but because we can see God's hand in these different areas. And for us at CMC, the biggest thing in whether or not we're being faithful and successful has more to do with whether we're being faithful in following what God is leading us to do than it does with anything else. Because I truly believe if we are heeding what God is leading us to do, we can't not be successful. Like, you may not grow into a mega congregation, right? But if you're walking faithfully in the direction God has paved before you, you cannot fail.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if where you're at that moment, the outside world or even the rest of the body would consider to be a failure. You can't be a failure if you're where God called you to be, doing what God called you to do in the way that God called you to right. do it.
And that's going to be unique to each group.
Correct.
And one of the things that we've tried to implement in our community is that whenever we felt led to do something new, we didn't try to do it our own and reinvent our own wheel. We went, like when we wanted to go live streaming, we talked to people who were already live streaming and said, okay, how are you doing this? What equipment do you have? How do we? And we started doing that. If we want to do some kind of city outreach, we go to organizations that do city outreaches and say, how do you do this?
Right.
When we started our worship team, we did so, and we put together guidelines for all of these different things that we use as a community that we're now sending to other congregations that are trying to set up those different programs so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. But they don't have to be all have all that we have to use those different aspects to build their congregations.
Right.
So they're not comparing themselves to us. But if they want to have, if you want to have a large Passover Seder, There's no reason you should figure out how to do it all on your own. You go to other congregations that do it and say, how did you do this? And then implement those aspects of how you do it. If you want to have a worship team, what are the guidelines you established for your worship team so that we can have something to work from to establish a healthy worship team? It may not look exactly the same, but it helps to have those things and to not be afraid to reach out to those who have done something so that you can start at a step up the ladder, so to speak, instead of on the ground floor. And then don't expect it to look exactly like the people that did it before you, because you're not them.
Right.
You know, we've joked for months on end now that some of our best conversations happen before we hit record, and that maybe what we should do is just start hitting record when we first put everything together and see where it goes. And this is the first time that we actually did that. Like, we this conversation just kind of naturally spawned while we were sitting here getting stuff set up, and went, you know what, forget it. Actually, Rabbi Jonathan just reached over and hit the record button. Yeah. And I think, at least for me, I think it was a really great conversation.
Because we talk about it all the time. Yeah. I was like, well, let's just do it.
It was a really great conversation. And I really, truly pray that it's a blessing to many out there. Whether you're a large congregation, a small congregation, a fledgling congregation, whatever, we desire to see you be successful as God desires for you to be successful, not for you to be successful as you're comparing success to other communities.
Right.
Your congregation, your community has its own identity and its own needs for meeting those needs. You know, our community, our congregation is on the Gulf Coast of Alabama, and a very there's a small Jewish community, but it's a decent number Jewish community, but they're completely disconnected from the Jewish religious world. And so there, like, we couldn't start an Orthodox leaning synagogue in our area and have any hope of bringing people in to meet Messiah in that avenue. But there are other areas where that could happen. And so we can't compare ourselves to other people. But what we do need to do is constantly be striving, one, to be successful as God has called us to be, and two, to be encouraging one another to be successful. Because I think that's another key to success as we wrap this out today, is that we need to be working towards his kingdom, not our kingdom. And so, as Rabbi Eric was saying, all these protocols, all these systems, all these things that have been put into place, make them available for other people. If you find something that you're really good at that could potentially be a blessing for somebody else, give it to them so that they can figure out how to make it work in their community if the Lord's leading in that direction. It is not our kingdom, it is his, and we should be working together in unity that does not require uniformity. We should be working together in unity, and that's going to be another episode one day, unity versus uniformity. So with that said, we appreciate you listening. We hope that this was as much a blessing to you as it has been to us cathartically working through this conversation, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.